Wayne, registration number 7612. This case, the essential allegation in this case is in paragraph 9 of the complaint, in which ESF alleges it's the rightful owner of these four lots. The facts, material facts regarding that allegation, however, are undisputed by both parties and were presented in ESF's case in chief. And based on those undisputed facts, all of ESF's claims fail. The nature of the relationship is the critical fact. The undisputed evidence in Exhibit 16, Mr. Irving's testimony, Mr. McKenna's testimony, was this was a financing arrangement in which the lots were placed in the title of ESF as security. ESF was entitled to recover its costs, interest, some fees, and then everything else would belong to McKenna Development, Inc., MDI. Colorado statutory law and case law is crystal clear. The true nature of the relationship is relevant. And if the relationship is a security relationship, the title is treated as a lien, not fee ownership. And that was the undisputed evidence in this case. The second material fact, which was undisputed, is that MDI did not owe any money to ESF in 2007. That's Exhibit 27 and the testimony of the parties. So it wasn't that the security interest was still in effect. In fact, the contrary was true. ESF owed money.
Are you saying that the plaintiff here agreed that at the time of the conveyance of the lots, that there was nothing owed to the plaintiff?
To the plaintiff. The plaintiff is ESF.
Yes.
And its evidence, Exhibit 27, shows that in 2007, at all times, ESF owed money to McKenna Development, Inc., which is a non-party, and that McKenna Development, Inc. did not owe any money to ESF.
That was my question. You're saying that it basically was undisputed.
Yes.
That at the time of the conveyance, okay,
that
there was no money owed to the plaintiff, to ESF.
Yes.
Okay.
From MDI, from McKenna Development, Inc.
Well, from either MDI or MDC.
MDC wasn't even in existence at the time, so I don't think there was any claim made of that nature. And there's no evidence to that effect.
So, is there a counterclaim filed against ESF for the money you claim or you state MDI was owed?
How much?
Was there a counterclaim filed against ESF by the money you just state was owed by ESF to
yes.
MDI? There was a counterclaim.
Yes.
It was owed to MDI and someone filed a counterclaim seeking that money.
Well,
who filed the counterclaim seeking the money? McKenna Development Company? So they're standing in the shoes of MDI's claim. Is that right, Mr. Cohn?
It's unclear. The counterclaim is characterized as a cross claim, a third party claim.
Right.
And it says Mr. McKenna is owed money by ESF. But the exhibit presented by ESF is undisputed. And that shows that ESF owed money to MDI and not vice versa.
And that money was claimed by one of the defendants in this case. That's what you're just telling me, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I'm asking.
And so nothing is owed under this lien. And so under the agreement, MDI, again, non-party, was entitled to the lots, because this was a security arrangement. Even though title was in ESF's name, MDI was the rightful owner under clear statutory and case law in Colorado.
It was the equitable owner of the lots, you're telling us, right?
Yes.
It had lent money, or excuse me, it had
borrowed money.
It had pledged the lots as security. It had paid off the loan, so to speak, and it was entitled to return of the lots, right?
Correct.
Equitable owner. So did MDI sue ESF or make some kind of legal claim for the lots? No.
No.
What happened was Mr. McKenna instead just transferred title to the lots to some other entity, right?
To McKenna Development Inc., yes.
Right. Just yes. Without authority from ESF or anything like that.
Well, that was an issue. I think Mr. McKenna had that authority.
Based on what?
Based on the agreement with Mr. Irving and ESF.
Disclosed to Mr. Irving that the lots were being transferred back to EMI, or sort of transferred back to EMI?
No.
Okay.
No, there wasn't. But if we look at the claims, one of the essential elements of fraud claims, civil conspiracy claims, are damages. And so if ESF is owed no money, and these lots are security for a loan which has been paid off, there are no damages. So for that reason, in and of itself, the claims fail. In addition, the fraud claim, for example, is based upon an alleged representation, which then ESF would act in reliance on in doing something. There's no evidence of any representation. There's no evidence of any act by ESF in reliance upon this alleged representation. The same thing for the fraudulent concealment claim. Concealed facts which the other party relies upon in taking action or failing to take action, there's absolutely no evidence of that whatsoever.
Of a concealment or of a lack of reliance?
Excuse me?
There's no evidence of concealment or no evidence of lack of reliance, or both?
Or both.
Both, you're saying.
Okay. Both. And there's no evidence of any damages. Even if there had been a representation, there's no damages because the debt was paid in full. The same thing on the fiduciary duty claim. This was a relationship, a contractual relationship between McKenna Development Inc. and ESF. We are alleging that Mr. McKenna had a fiduciary duty. There's no evidence of that. In the answer brief on page 25, ESF argues that Mr. McKenna was a partner, a joint venturer with ESF. Now, there's no evidence of any partnership relationship. But if it is a partnership relationship, how can ESF, we don't think there was a partnership relationship, which is a contractual relationship, but how can ESF get damages, get title to the property, and not honor this contract to pay all the profits to MDIF that's been paid in full? And it has been paid in full. So there's no evidence to support that claim. The civil conspiracy claim alleges that Patricia McKenna, because she assisted in filing articles of organization of a limited liability company a month after these deeds were executed and 2 weeks after they were recorded, somehow conspired to deprive ESF of the property.
Was there also evidence that she purported to act as the secretary of ESF in connection with the Colonial Bank loan?
But there was evidence to that effect, but that was 5 years before, and there were no damages alleged from that action. The damages alleged are a loss of the lots.
As long as we're on the subject, let's pursue it. Assuming that McKenna's fraudulently represented to Colonial Bank that they were officers of ESF in order to obtain that loan from Colonial Bank, which I assume they received, the properties were tied up. Isn't that a damage to ESF?
Well, again, that happened in 2002. The evidence is clear that Mr. Irving knew about it. It's disputed whether he knew about it before or after. But the evidence is clear. That's barred by statute of limitations.
Was that
5 years later.
Well, was that asserted as a defense in this case?
No.
Okay.
But no damages resulted from that. I'd like to answer any questions, but I'd like to reserve some rebuttal time.
I had just one question.
Yes.
You assert in your brief, as I understand it, that the only evidence with respect to damage was the value of the lots. Is that correct? Did I understand you correctly?
Yes.
There was no damages, there was no evidence presented except the value of the lots?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Richard Olona, attorney number 17940, and I represent Equity Secured Funds. The McKenna's defense in this trial was not that there was no money owed. In fact, that's not true. There was a lot of money owed to other parties, and these lots secured that debt.
How?
It was clearly secured. They were transferred to Equity Secured Funds. It was stipulated in evidence that that's why Equity Secured Funds was formed. It was formed to hold the lots for the development of the lots. Ultimate sale takes place, and then the parties divvy up the cash that's remaining.
Yeah, how does that affect debts to third parties?
The way it originally started, Your Honor, was that Equity Secured Funds was making the loans directly to McKenna Development Company for them to build out these lots. As it progressed, Equity Secured Funds didn't have any more money. So the parties obtained additional monies from outside parties, including a company called IRA Development.
How did that affect ESF?
I believe it affected ESF because, number one, ESF was the holding entity of the lots.
How did it damage ESF?
How did what damage ESF, Your Honor?
Well, the fact that other parties were owed.
Oh, that didn't damage. It just made it very clear to MDC that the rightful ownership of the lots was in Equity Secured Funds to make sure that these other parties that had lent MDC money would be repaid from the sale of the lots.
Was ESF indebted to these other parties?
No, Your Honor. And in fact, there's a question as to whether or not there was no money owed. That's just simply not true. What Mr. Cohen's doing is he's taking a single page out of hundreds of financial pages, and he's pointing to one simple section that seems to support his claim, but that was never testified to at trial, Your Honor. You can check the whole transcript. What did come out is that there was substantial monies owed from MDC to Equity Secured Fund at the time of the transfer. Now the defense was not...
How much was that?
I think it was in excess of $40,000.
$40,000?
Yes, sir. Now, the defense was not that. It was that. What Ed McKenna's defense was is that I have a right to transfer these lots because I'm the rightful owner. He claims he was not only the owner of the lots. At trial, he claimed he was the owner of Equity Secured Funds. And for that reason, there was no wrongful transfer. Now, that's why the case hinged in this case on who owned ESF and who owned the lots. And the evidence was overwhelming that Ed was wrong and Patrick Irving was right.
Counsel, here's the trouble I'm having. You agree, I presume, that the title was placed in ESF for security purposes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And at the time of the transfer, let's just accept your number of $40,000. How did the transfer damage ESF beyond that amount?
Well, Your Honor, it damaged them severely because there was an understanding between the parties that the
$600,000 to $700,000 that had been borrowed by MDC from these other third parties, they would be held in ESF so that those parties would be repaid before anybody.
How did that damage ESF beyond $40,000 that it was owed?
I believe ESF was holding those properties in trust for the benefit of these other parties, and that the minute they lost control of those part of that of those, Your Honor, they ESF bought these properties. ESF, McKenna did not buy these properties. ESF bought them between 1996 and 1999. ESF paid the holding costs for those 10 years before this happened.
No question about that, and I'm not arguing that. It does seem to me, however, that we have to determine what evidence there was of damage to ESF. And the $40,000 is clear. Was there testimony as to the amount owed to third parties and that ESF was liable to those third parties?
I believe there was, Your Honor. There was.
What evidence was that?
There was evidence that there was, this was a part of the objections and part of the claims made is that there was testimony about this debt to IRA real estate. And the other side, McKenna Development, they objected on grounds that, hey, that's irrelevant. And the court agreed, and the court said, look, ESF, you cannot seek to recover those damages. And they instructed the jury. They, in fact, granted the motion in limine that was requested. But the court used its discretion to say that this is information that's important. It's important because it's, number one, factual, and it's
well, okay, the so the court didn't allow whatever was owed to IRA real estate to be used by you as damages.
Well, that is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, what evidence of damages to you was there beyond the $40,000?
There was significant evidence of damages in the fact that the lots had been transferred away without authority. They lost.
And how did that damage you? How did that damage you?
They lost, well, number one, they had to initiate this lawsuit to recover them. Secondly, ESF, as the party holding these lots, would in fact have a problem with IRA real estate if those lots were just simply taken away.
But the trial court ruled that that amount could not be used by you as damages.
Not in this hearing.
Yes.
But if that security interest and that ownership were to disappear, as it did when these lots were transferred away, then ESF would be, I guess, without any means to pay back IRA real estate. And that's exactly the position they were in until the jury ruled that they should have these lots returned to them.
Did IRA make a claim against ESF?
IRA has not made a claim.
But they were faced with a claim against, that's what you're saying.
Absolutely.
They were faced with a claim and they couldn't satisfy the security interest of IRA anymore because the lots were no longer in their legal title.
The lots were there to protect that debt.
Was there testimony as to the amount owed to IRA?
Yes, Your Honor.
How much was that?
It was $600,000 or plus. I'm not exactly sure of the amount, Your Honor. Now, the evidence did show that Pat Irving was the sole shareholder of ESF. It was formed that way and taxed that way. And for every year from 1996 to 2007, Mr. Irving received every K-1 and he paid all taxes associated with ESF's operation. Mr. McKenna paid no tax, was never recognized as an owner. Mr. Irving served as the president of ESF from its inception and was recognized in correspondence throughout the years that he was president by McKenna. Now, Ed claimed at trial on the stand that he owed equity secured funds.
Owned?
That he owned it. But he had to admit upon cross-examination that in a prior case, in sworn deposition, he testified under oath that Patrick Irving was the owner of ESF and that he, Ed McKenna, never owned the lots and never owned any shares. And when I asked him, well, which testimony is the truth, he said, ask me the question in context and I'll give you the right answer. And I asked him, well, does one set of facts work for one lawsuit and one set of facts for another? And his response was, I think it's okay. I think there are times when in context, one is true and not the other. And I think that was compelling to the jury that he's claiming that he owned equity secured funds. There was no claim, Your Honor, that we don't owe him the money. This is something that just sprung up. What the argument was is we have a right to do this because I own ESF.
Let me ask a question on your fraud claim, please. What misrepresentations were made or what material information was concealed from ESF on which it relied?
Your Honor, the answer brief that I submitted submits a number of bullet points which I believe sets forth what was failed to disclose, what McKenna failed to disclose. I think what he failed to disclose was that he intended to own the lots, or that he felt he owned the lots, despite the fact that ESF had purchased them, despite the fact that ESF had held on to the title and had carried the costs. I think
he expressed those things which would be in violation of their agreement, isn't that right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So then why isn't that barred by the, what's it called, the...
Evidence?
Yes. No. Sorry. Their first argument, I'm sorry. It's slipping my mind.
How did ESF...
The economic loss rule, excuse me.
Yes, thank you.
Sure. If those are claims on the contract, they're barred by the economic loss rule. What are the representations off the contract?
I think that the case law in Colorado is clear that the economic loss rule will not bar a... excuse me, Your Honor, I may be missing something here. The economic loss rule will not bar a contract-related claim if an independent duty of care exists under the law.
Independent of the contract?
Independent of the contract.
So what was the duty independent of the contract that he was violating if he was misrepresenting the terms of the contract?
I believe, Your Honor, if he was intending to transfer the lots to his own accord, I think he had a duty not to commit theft of those lots.
Theft, I agree, but I'm talking about fraud.
Your Honor, I think his representations were is that ESF is going to hold these lots for security, and in all the while, I guess in his mind, he presumed that the lots were his. He took out a loan without notice to the ESF based on that. He transferred the lots without authority. I think he convinced Mr. Irving and ESF that this was a partnership, it was a joint venture going forward, and I think Mr. Irving reasonably relied on that.
Judge Criswell had a question that didn't quite get answered. Your thrust of your case is you wanted these lots returned to ESF, correct? Four lots. But you also claim damages. Now, how are the damages, are they still out there if the lots are returned, or you have a duplicate of recovery?
Your Honor, respectfully, that there was a significant amount of evidence introduced as to the relationship of these parties and the interaction of these parties as it had gone on. We believe that the determination of the damages is in the sole province of the jury, and that it can't be disturbed unless it's grossly or excessive.
Well, there's got to be some evidence to support it, and Mr. Cohen suggests there's none, and I'm just curious, what are the damages?
There was tons of evidence, Your Honor. There was...
Give us a couple of examples now.
Well, there was detailed accountings of all the transactions, and if you can give me a second, I can tell you where that is.
Are you talking about how much ESF was owed?
Yes, Your Honor.
I thought you said $40,000.
I think if we were talking about simply that one sheet... That Mr. Cohen.
No. Tell me what the evidence showed, if it showed anything, about how much ESF claimed was due to it.
Your Honor, the parties introduced significant evidence. In the form of detailed accountings of every financial transaction between the parties since their inception. There was notes, there were stock balances, summary of advances, there was correspondence between the parties as to what was owing. I apologize to the court, I don't have the exhibits 32, 33, 34, 37, and 40 in front of me. There was significant testimony from Mr. Irving about the costs that he had incurred to hold these lots and as to the value of the lots.
And some of these were repaid.
Some of them were repaid.
Net. What was owed?
That's correct.
But $40,000? I thought that's what you said.
As far as what was outstanding from MBI to ESF, my understanding is it's $40,000. I'm going by memory alone, Your Honor.
Okay.
Going back to...
ask you one more question. I'm sorry. The eighth claim for relief sought a declaratory judgment as to the rightful ownership of the lots. Did you pursue that, the judgment, the declaratory judgment request? What happened to it?
I believe that it was omitted at the start of the trial.
What do you mean omitted?
It was
dismissed?
Pursued.
So it was dismissed?
Talking about the claim by ESF for it?
No. Your client's claim, eighth claim for relief, declaratory judgment. EFF seeks a declaration of the rights of the parties as they relate to the lots. What happened to that claim?
I don't recall, Your Honor. It's part of the complaint, but it did not appear, and it did not appear in the jury instructions either.
Well, it's a declaratory judgment action, so it would only be tried to the court. It would be asked for the court. Did you ever move the court to enter declaratory judgment on that?
No, Your Honor.
Counsel, that raises another question in my mind. How does a jury enter an equitable decree to return lots?
Well, I think they did so under the civil theft statute, the claim for civil theft.
And does that say that the jury passes upon that question?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that the civil theft statute allows for that kind of a remedy.
I'm not suggesting it doesn't. I'm just saying, how is it that the jury passes upon this equitable relief?
Your Honor, it was presented that way. There's been a number of objections to the jury instructions. Our argument is clearly that objections to jury instructions should have been made at the time. These were submitted, stipulated, and approved by both parties. The jury instruction did provide that that would be one of the remedies available.
Is that a jurisdictional issue?
Perhaps. Just in closing, Your Honor, I'm down to 30 seconds or so. I would like to point out that regarding Patty McKenna and the claim that there was no evidence of civil conspiracy, I think there was a lot of it, not just the fact that she represented herself as an officer when she was not, but also immediately after the transfer of the lots, she claimed personal ownership of these lots in a loan application. She was part and parcel of this entire project. Thank you.
Thank you. There's no evidence of any damages. This allegation of this $40,000 is not supported by the evidence. Exhibit 27 is clear, and I set forth the relevant numbers on page 12 of the opening brief, and it's clear that as of 12/31/06, this is an exhibit prepared by Patrick Irving, a CPA, president of ESF. As of 12/31/06, ESF owed McKenna Development Company over $105,000. On 12/31/07, this is 5 months, 6 months after the conveyances, ESF owed McKenna Development over $118,000, and it increased $13,000. And then he made some adjustments and said as of May 31st, 2008, ESF only owed McKenna Development $36. Still, ESF owed money to MDI.
Assuming you're correct and there were no damages, does that preclude the court from ordering return of these properties if they were inequitably transferred to MDI?
Yes, because in this case, under the clear statute, clear case law, this was a security. The security had been satisfied. Nothing was owed. And the only right that ESF had was as a secured lender. Since nothing was owed, it was required to release its deed of trust.
Had a claim been made by McKenna to release the deed of trust? Was that part of this case?
No.
He engaged in self-help and took the property back? Is that what happened here, in effect?
That's true.
And as a matter of equity, can't the court undo the self-help, return the property to where it belongs, and let the parties properly litigate whether amounts are owed or not owed, as you claim?
Well, that would be as a security interest, not as title. It's clear that it's just a security interest. And the evidence in this case, if you're talking about equity, the evidence in this case is nothing was owed, so the security interest doesn't exist anymore because nothing was owed.
It sounds like there's a debate about whether something's owed or not, notwithstanding what
right.
you're saying.
Right. I mean, if something is owed, then they could have a claim for damages for the amount that was owed for security. And the I just wanted to touch on this alleged $600,000 to IRA. Both Mr. Lunglin's counsel for ESF and Mr. Irving testified, we're going to file another lawsuit to recover those damages. That was never an issue in this case. McKenna Development Inc., which was not a party, Ed McKenna denies that any of that money was owed. You know, so that was never an issue. The jury never had that. And as Mr. Lohner just argued, ESF was not indebted to these third parties. There's no debt relationship between ESF and IRA. Nothing was owed. And so I understand your self-help, but if nothing is owed, the security interest has to be released. And that was the clear evidence at trial.
And I see my time is up. I'll answer any other questions.
Well, on this case, thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. This case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.